guess what day it is.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I had the same theme song for, I don't know, 15 years. And then Todd Manley found this. How can you not like this? Yeah, we don't know what it means either. $100, good morning.
Morning to you.
You look fabulous.
Thank you. It's a crisp fall-like morning. Beautiful day in Chicago.
60 for the high in the city today, which means it's going to be tough for me to be in my thong on North Avenue Beach. Dave, you look fabulous as well.
Thank you, Steve. You do, too.
Mary Vandeveld, Steve Grzanich on the seventh floor, also equally fabulous.
I love your hair this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ooh, I don't know if I would have gone there.
It's glowing bright.
It's a compliment.
It is.
Yeah. See, sometimes I'll look up at the monitors when the CLTV hour, the 9 o'clock hour, and I go, wow, who's the old guy on Steve's show? Oh, wait, that's me.
No.
All right, let's do it. The top six at six right now, sponsored by American Weathermakers, Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Men.
Item number one, the president did it yesterday through his deputy, Barney Fife, the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, with the announcement that the Dreamers, the DACA group, would no longer be allowed to stay in this country if Congress fails. And by the way, they are really good at failing. If Congress fails in their job over the next 6 months to find new immigration legislation to keep them here. Now, here's the reality of this. Politically, it is a nightmare for the Republican Party to allow this to happen. I know you're saying, Steve, they're already in the middle of a nightmare. Well, yes, you're right about that. But the Democrats and the Republicans will both pay a price for this if, in fact, it happens. And I know, you know, and as Bob Dole used to say, the American people know, that the immigration system could not be more screwed up. Having said that, throwing out these kids who didn't ask to be here doesn't fix anything.
Yeah.
And it makes us look like complete, heartless jerks at it to the rest of the world and certainly to this country. So politically, there's a huge price to pay. Point of all of that is, over the next 6 months, it'll either be kicked down the road for another 6 months or it will be solved in some way with some sort of a watered-down legislation that will extend some time for these kids to stay. In the meantime, the stress, it goes through the roof. You're going to hear a tragic story in the next 6 months. Somebody's going to kill themselves over the stress, or somebody's going to leave early and go back to a country they don't know and get hurt there. Or I mean, something bad is going to happen because of this, because of political cowards. But Trump's not wrong to kick it back to Congress. It's just there's nothing that makes you believe that people in Congress will do the right thing.
Congress has 6 months to come up with the alternative program. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer holding a press conference this morning. They're going to call on congressional Republicans to bring the DREAM Act for a floor on the House and Senate floor, or for a vote, rather, on the House and Senate floor. And what's amazing to me are some of the stats coming out now that Illinois is fourth in the nation when it comes to how many Dreamers we have here.
42,376 Illinoisans have been approved in the program since March 31st. This is a bait and switch. This is come out of the shadows, make your applications, pay your taxes, be a productive citizen, and then we'll throw you out. It's not what we do. Next.
Aside from the emotional part of this, the early estimates are this could cost the economy $400 billion over 10 years just for the from the people who are of working age leaving.
Well, just based on the selfishness of all of this, we need to figure out the immigration piece to make sure that, well, we eat. Because Orion Samuelson will be the first. And Orion Samuelson is an 83-year-old man. He will be the first to tell you that without the hardworking farm labor that is the backbone of now harvest time in this country and the backbone of the farms in this country, who's picking the food? Who's processing the food?
Right.
Who's taking it from the field to the plants to the table?
Number two and number three countries affected, India and South Korea. So you have a lot of people from a lot of different countries here.
So we need to get it figured out. And I'd like to tell you that the people I know in Congress, and I know a lot of them, are really confidence builders. Yeah, that's not the case. Next up, Irma. This is as big and as bad as it gets. The Category 5 hurricane is literally the strongest hurricane ever tracked by those weather folks. And it is now barreling towards Puerto Rico next. It made landfall where?
St. Martin.
Yep. Yeah. In the Caribbean.
Yep. And Barbuda?
Barbuda.
Overnight. Yes. Expected to strike Puerto Rico later today. On target to reach Florida this weekend unless it changes. The weather folks are not optimistic about a change in path at this point. And South Florida's evacuation plan has begun.
Did you hear the Pope was flying to Colombia and they had to reroute his plane to avoid Irma? It was a special jetliner. It departed late Wednesday morning from Rome. It was originally supposed to fly over Puerto Rico and Venezuela, but they had to reroute his plane.
And the winds are so strong in St. Martin when the storm hit, similar to an F5 tornado. So that's the kind of tornado that scours the ground and takes everything off of the surface of the ground.
And an F5 tornado that's hundreds of miles wide.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want that. Wouldn't you think the Pope could make a call, though? Call the home office?
I know, right?
Go, hey, could we move this over a little bit so I could fly in?
Actually fly into
You mean
it
to God?
Yeah, to call God.
Or Mother Nature. Who
no,
do you
I
call
would
at this
Pope,
point?
I would think the Pope could text God.
Right. Or a hotline. I'm sure there's a hotline on the phone, right?
Emoji God, like with the, you know, the crying, you know, the waterworks coming
out. I wonder
if
the Pope has Bitmoji.
Oh, I bet. That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah. You know, the Bitmoji little character guy?
Yeah.
Next. I take you back to October 27th, 2006, when J.B. Pritzker and his wife gave $100,000 in campaign donations to Friends of Blagojevich. 4 days later, a week before the election, Blagojevich announced he was giving a $1 million state grant to the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie. Asked Tuesday whether there was any connection between the $100,000 campaign contribution and the state grant, Pritzker said he didn't recall specifically either the contribution or the grant. I got to tell you, I haven't written a $100,000 check to anybody in my life.
No.
If I did, I'd remember it.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, if you have any sort of connections to the Holocaust Museum, I'm pretty sure those are things that would stand out in your head.
Big time. Big time. This is it's a wonderful museum, too.
Pritzker's got some splaining to do next. City Hall agrees to cover about $80 million CPS security costs. Is this standard operating costs? I don't know the answer to that.
It's higher than what it should be.
Okay.
There's a lot of overtime going on, though.
Which reminds me, we need to get the guy with the impossible to pronounce last name to come back in, who is keeping the books open, the Open the Books guy, openthebooks.org, I think was his website.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
right.
He's the guy that identified the overtime problem that we have in the state, which is nothing but mismanagement again. Next. Scientists have found remnants of Zoloft, Celexa, Prozac, and Seraphim in 10 fish species from the Niagara River connecting Lake Erie to Lake Ontario. This can only mean one thing. These fish are hanging around with the wrong group of fish.
I'm not sure you're going to say the fish are depressed.
The fish are depressed. Yes, the fish, no. It's people flushing their drugs.
Right. They're hanging around in the wrong place, which is in the lake.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people still do that?
They'll flush their drugs?
Down the toilet? Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it.
No, it's a bad idea. What you don't want is a bunch of sad fish.
You know, the drugs normally dilute, so that tells you how much is being flushed. Just the sheer quantity.
How do you know about diluted drugs? What are you running your own sort
well,
of?
It's science. I mean, you just take.
No, is it? Is it, Mr. Drug Guy?
Yeah, I think if you put like an aspirin in a glass of water, you'd see it dilute and kind of dissolve.
Okay, Pablo Escobar, I think we know. And finally this. The Bears are bringing in four wide receivers for a tryout. Who are they looking at, Dave? Let's go live to Dave now at Soldier Field. Dave?
These aren't necessarily guys. They were there yesterday, and they're not necessarily recognizable guys.
Well, give me some names. I know everybody.
Let's see. Mario Alford.
Never heard of him.
Monte Crockett.
Nope.
Frankie Hammond.
Frankie Hammond?
City. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
you know a guy named Frankie?
I got a guy named, and a guy named Hammond.
Named Hammond, right?
So none of these guys are
A-liners. Four receivers and four DBs, and okay. They're just... Obviously, they're still dealing with the Cameron Meredith injury at wide receiver, so that's an area where if they have a chance to upgrade. They lost DeAndre Hall to injury, put him on injured reserve over the weekend. If they can add a DB, that's an area they would look at. But again, that doesn't mean they're going to go out and get somebody. It just means they like to know who's available, who might fit their needs down the road.
And did we ever find Kevin White yesterday? Did the Bears ever get back to us?
Well, the Bears didn't practice yesterday, so.
So we don't know if Kevin White's missing?
I don't think he's missing. He was just missing from the show.
That's my definition of missing.
I guess it is.
That's your top 6 at 6, brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-minute mention. We give away a desktop weather station. This is Jake's favorite part of the show. Let's give away a desktop weather station, an indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers. Sixth caller at 312-981-7200 gets it. You will be the winner of the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-minute men. Mary.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
.625 is your Chicago Cubs try to hold on to the Central. You got trouble in the American League East in one of these storied rivalries of baseball. It's the Red Sox and the Yankees, who are using Apple Watches to cheat. Hold on a second. Don't you own an Apple Watch, Mr. Kett?
Do I have an Apple Watch?
Yes.
I have an Apple Watch.
Yes.
It was a birthday gift from my wife.
Maybe you two are in cahoots. You ever been to cahoots? It's nice this time of year.
Yeah, I hear it's very nice.
I don't understand this story. How do they steal signals with and signs with an Apple Watch? And why do you need an Apple Watch to steal signs?
Well, I don't think you do, but it's a way to communicate. So...
Because you can't have your cell phone in the dugout texting.
Well, but
friends.
They were also using cell phones. It's very complicated, the whole deal. But
you Apple Watch people would say that because that's how you cover your tracks.
They show that, according to the New York Times, the Yankees were able to videotape the Red Sox system in action here. They had on the video supposedly that they show. A Red Sox trainer looking at his Apple Watch.
A lot.
He could be checking his email.
Yeah.
You never know. Then passing along a signal to two players. And then apparently one of the players passing the information along to a teammate who's out at second base, who then relays it to the batter.
Seems so like it's, a whole lot
it's
of work.
It's basically pinballing around the diamond.
You're playing telephone tag.
Yeah.
And by the time it gets to the hitter, I wouldn't know what's coming. Fastball, curveball, why don't I just guess?
Maybe they should spend some more time in the batter's box hitting cages.
You know, they're talking about basically when the Red Sox had a guy on second base, because he was the last relay to the batter. He would flash the signal to the batter. Okay, the guy on second.
It's like to be the guy on second and you're trying to remember all the signs and the indicators, and you're going, I got to figure out when I'm running.
Right. Well, you got that, too. There's a lot to think about. But according to the New York Times, when the Red Sox had men on second base, they went 5-for-8 in this series. And since then, in the next couple of games, they went 1-for-6 and 3-for-10. So there was definitely an improvement in their performance when they had a guy at second base.
This is another positive change that Theo's made. Have you noticed? Remember in the old days where the Cubs would actually have a fax machine at second base? They'd roll out a fax machine and they would actually fax signs into the batter. I mean, that was cumbersome.
You're not allowed to have, are professional athletes allowed to have their cell phones on the bench?
One of the issues here, because there were also cell phones involved.
Once you get play ball, yeah, from the umpire, there can be no communication on the field.
Correct.
Outside of the legally deemed communication, the phone to the bullpen. Mm-hmm. You can't have connection to the owners in the box upstairs. You can't be talking to scouts. There's none of that. And that all goes back to the Black Sox thing that Dave covered in 1918.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Here's what I thought.
Award-winning coverage.
Okay, here's what I thought was interesting. This was Dave Dombrowski, the president of the Boston Red Sox. Mm-hmm. Very respected baseball.
The Tigers and other teams.
Yeah. So he says he was not aware of it. But here's the rest of what he said.
Do I think sign stealing is wrong? No, I don't. I guess it depends how you do it, but I've never thought it's wrong. I guess everybody in the game that's been involved with it and throughout the years, it's a net. People are trying to win however they can.
I don't disagree with him. I don't disagree with him at all. There's no rule.
There is not a rule.
There's no rule for it, and I think it's wrong to teach it, you know, when you're a little leaguer and all that. But when you become a professional at the major league level and you're trying to win, I think in the course of the game, if you have a skill where you can figure out what the other team is doing, that's what sign stealing is.
Well, and if you were to translate it to other sports, in football, if you see a quarterback perhaps tipping what sort of play they're going to run, the defense is looking for that.
Are we supposed to ignore it?
But
cover your eyes, Dan Hampton.
But you are.
The quarterback's telling us something.
When you're using technology in this case, then you are stepping over the line.
I agree with that.
So that's the difference.
I'm an old school sign stealer. I believe the theft should occur naturally.
And listen, you may be stealing signs and guessing wrong, too. There's always that.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like a whole lot of work? Just go
as
up
opposed
and hit
to
see
ball, hit ball, run.
Exactly.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. Yeah. Lou Piniella, I'm just finishing Lou Piniella's book, and Lou has got Lou Pinions at the end of the book. It's a chapter about what he thinks of how things are going in the game. And, you know, he's an old school guy.
Yeah.
But he makes great points. And a lot of the human element it gets drummed out of the game with sabermetrics and the overthink that's gone on now.
Boy.
And, if you can show me where baseball is dramatically better because of this, well, then okay. I don't see it.
This is on a much different level, but as kids, we'd play in the street with a wooden bat and a tennis ball. And when the bat cracked, my friend's dad came out and duct taped it for us, and we just continued playing.
You know how it's different now? Kids don't play on the street.
Right. Sorry.
Kids don't play outside.
And the dad doesn't come out with duct tape.
No.
And fix the bat.
No, he calls someone.
Yes.
He calls the duct tape guy. It's 6:31. Let's come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
Did you guys meet my nephew?
Yeah.
Andy, lean into that microphone. That's my nephew, Andy Down, visiting. We've got family in town, a little extended Labor Day situation. Andy, tell everybody where you live now.
I live up in Traverse City, Michigan.
And what do you do in Traverse City?
I'm a fire chief up there now.
So you're the fire chief for all of Traverse City?
No, township just to the west of that, Long Lake Township.
Long Lake Township. How many people are you responsible for?
About 10,000.
Okay. And how are things?
It's a good little city. It's an expanding city like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah. It's a beautiful area, right?
Very beautiful.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming in this morning. What do you think of Dave's performance so far?
He's an all-star. He's a rock star.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Andy. Did I ever tell you Andy's your favorite nephew?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well,
I guess my favorite of your nephews.
Of all the ones you've met?
Yes.
I'd hope so.
All right, stand by. And by the way, later on with Andy, we'll play a brand new game called I've Got to Set an Insurance Fire. Do you have any tips? That's later on in the show. All right, I got some sound I want to play for you. Now, you dial the clock back 37 years. It's 1980. Since 1980, you would think we've advanced as a culture, as a society. We're more understanding. We're more welcoming. We're better people. I mean, you think about it. If it was 1980 and you dialed the clock back 37 years, it would have been 1943. There would have been Japanese internment camps. So you would think every 37 years or so, we ought to do a little better. Here's the argument that went on in 1980. George H.W. Bush, the candidate, Ronald Reagan, the candidate, in 1980 when they both wanted to be president.
I'd like to see something done about the illegal alien problem that would be so sensitive and so understanding about labor needs and human needs. The problem has to be solved. The answer to your question is much more fundamental than whether they attend Houston schools, it seems to me. I don't want to see a whole, if they're living here, I don't want to see a whole thing of 6- and 8-year-old kids being made, you know, one totally uneducated and made to feel that they're living with outside the law. Let's address ourselves to the fundamentals. These are good people, strong people. Part of my family is a Mexican.
I add to that, I think the time has come that the United States and our neighbors, particularly our neighbor to the south, should have a better understanding and a better relationship than we've ever had. And I think that we haven't been sensitive enough to our size and our power. The possibility of trouble below the border, and we could have a very hostile and strange neighbor on our border. Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems, make it possible for them to come here legally with a work permit, and then while they're working and earning here, they pay taxes here. And when they want to go back, they can go back.
That's 1980. That's 37 years ago. George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan arguing about who could be more compassionate when it comes to the immigration problem. We've done nothing other than go backwards. Meanwhile, what was the hot topic yesterday at the presidential briefing? Here's Sarah Huckabee Sanders with some strange advice. Listen.
He's spoken to a number of leaders, but hopefully, as you guys all know, they just came back from a three-week vacation. I think that they should be rested and ready to take on some big challenges that America faces.
Why put the fate of the lives of 800,000?
Because it's Congress's job to create law. It's Congress's job to create legislation. I think that's something we all learned in eighth grade civics. I know I certainly did, and I think that every member of Congress should know that that is their duty, and we're asking them to fulfill it. It's pretty simple. I think that the American people elected them to do it. And again, if they can't, then they should get out of the way and let somebody else take their job that can actually get something done.
See, this is the thing where I think all of us, certainly I do, but all of us tend to jump to the president's a fool. The president's not very smart. The president doesn't understand what's going on. Well, probably nobody on his team understands what's going on. That's the press secretary for the Republican president of the United States trashing the Congress, who has been tasked with the duty of fixing the immigration problem, which wasn't fixed 37 years ago and is worse today than it's ever been. And the press secretary is saying, if you can't get it done, get out of the way. They're on your team. They're the Republicans. That's just unbelievable. Meanwhile, let's go to Jimmy Kimmel for some intelligence on all of this. Do you turn to Jimmy Kimmel at times like this when you need some intelligence?
Usually, yeah.
All right, here we go.
DACA, they call it. It's a program that gives undocumented immigrants whose parents brought them into the country when they were children the chance to work and go to school legally. And this is what he wants to do away with, mostly because President Obama is the one who ordered it. It seems like his main agenda is just to undo everything Obama did. I hope he doesn't bring Bin Laden back to life, because that's... But anyway, a few months ago, it's a surprise, because a few months ago, Trump said that those covered by DACA could rest easy. And that's when you know you're in trouble. It's like when Dracula tells you to relax and take off your scarf. Okay? These are American kids. Some of these kids have never visited the places they could get deported to. The president's spokesperson said it was a difficult decision. The president's been debating it for months. But ultimately, Donald Trump believes that if these kids want to be American, they have to do it the right way, by marrying Donald Trump. And that's as simple as that.
I like how that's what offended the audience. Let's get traffic in here from Mary, and then Karen Travis from ABC picks up where the news goes on the DACA story today. First, Mary, let's get an update on where this is going to go news-wise today from Karen Travis at ABC. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
The DACA deal, as it came down yesterday, is now in Congress's lap. Have we heard much from McConnell or Ryan on this?
You know, they're talking pretty vague about this. Yes, we're going to, you know, start some work on this, but not a lot of details as to when this could get on a calendar. I mean, they're really in the early stages. But I think it was notable yesterday that you started to see the rumblings of bringing back legislation that had previously been considered. Some variation of a DREAM Act has been talked about, has been voted on about a dozen times since 2001. It's just never passed. Now, the political calculation is much different this time, because before they were looking at it as giving protection from deportation, giving these legal work permits. Now, with it being taken away, you might see some no's come off the fence and be a yes. Now, here's the thing. The White House has put this squarely on Congress. The message yesterday was, do your job, do your job, do your job. It's your job. The president was not going to get into the details and the nuts and bolts of it. But then last night, the president tweeted, if Congress isn't able to legalize DACA in 6 months, he says he'll revisit it. That muddies the message. It essentially is the president showing his cards, and it might give lawmakers some wiggle room to just push it right back down to the White House. Why should they try to get it done in 6 months if the president says he'll just reconsider it in six months?
Well, and that's the thing that, Andrea, I was talking to you about a half an hour ago, and that is there is no way that these self-serving, self-survivalists who are more concerned about their jobs than they are doing the right thing will allow themselves to be politically blown up here. Mm-hmm. Given the opening, they will kick it back. But Andrea, what did you want to throw?
Karen, was there any sort of, and I think I know the answer to this, but any sort of addressing the issue of maybe the people who are here can be either grandfathered in, mm-hmm. and then in 6 months it starts with a clean slate? And I know there was also concern about some of the comments that Jeff Sessions made, mm-hmm. which just were not true.
Yeah, I mean, let's start the first question. You know, they're saying that this is a wind down period, so no new applications are considered. So that's it. If you're not in the system as of yesterday, you're out of luck. If your DACA permit expires between now and March 5th, you have 1 month to apply for a 2-year renewal. So those people get a bit of a reprieve and can extend their permits by 2 years. If your legal status expires as of March 10th of next year, that's it. You're out of luck. So you're going to start seeing in early to mid-March these protections being, you know, pulled back from some of these DACA recipients. And that's where this 6-month window comes in, where the White House says, but before we get to that point, Congress should do something. And I think the other big question is, what should Congress do? What does the president want to see in a bill on DACA? Does he want it to look just like this executive order? Does he want it scaled back or extended? We don't know. The White House said yesterday that they've given detailed principles on this, but I don't think it's very clear what exactly the president would like to get to his desk to sign.
There's sourced and anonymously sourced stories coming out of the White House that up until the last minute before the mm-hmm. session's announcement yesterday morning, there was concern about whether the president understood what he was about to green light.
I saw that. I think it's also notable that it was Jeff Sessions who made this announcement yesterday. I mean, the president as president, compared to his campaign rhetoric, has softened his tone considerably on this issue. He, back in January, told ABC that, you know, the Dreamers didn't have anything to worry about. He constantly has said he wants to treat them with great heart, with compassion, and that this is a very difficult issue for him. Notably, then, it wasn't the president announcing he was rescinding DACA. It was Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who is a longtime fierce opponent of DACA. He certainly raised eyebrows, to get back to the other question, by calling these people illegal aliens who are taking jobs, and also noting a surge on the U.S.-Mexico border in 2014 that he says is because of DACA. Well, those people wouldn't even be able to apply for this. You have to have been in the country before that. And there was very strict timelines of who could get this protection, people that came here as young children, undocumented. So a lot of fact checks done on Jeff Sessions yesterday, but I think it is notable the message he put out and then what the president said just a couple of hours later, trying to talk about this in terms of humanitarian compassion.
We played some tape a few minutes ago of George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan in mm-hmm. a 1980 presidential debate arguing about who'd be more compassionate mm-hmm. over this.
I saw that floating around. Yeah, that's interesting to look
37
back, yeah.
years ago, mm-hmm. and we're still trying to figure it out. At some point, you can't go, we'll get them next time.
Yeah, and this is real practical implications right now compared to pre-2012. You have nearly 800,000 people who are allowed to work in this country, either are working or have the permit that they would be able to get a job. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a more Republican-leaning organization, would say yesterday came out and said this was a bad decision and this is going to hurt the U.S. economy. You certainly have seen business and tech leaders saying this is going to be a hit on the economy. You're taking taxpayers out of the system.
Appreciate the updates on all of that, and we'll follow it today with you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Karen Travers from ABC News. 7 o'clock news next here with Steve. And then in just a few minutes, I don't know if you guys have noticed. I don't want to say this too loud. Sandberg. She's a little nuts.
Shh. Oh. Steve.
We have another Sandberg story.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And Michael Oslin, one of the world's great experts on the Asian peninsula, if you will, and specifically in this case on the North Korean mess. Michael Austin will join us, too, to talk about whatever is happening there. It's 7:01. This is Steve Cochran, and they are listening to the Cochran Show, and I appreciate that on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Sandberg's here, producer of the program.
You know, I have a new husband.
Loyal means business. Comcast Sportsnet.
There's some systems at the house.
Wait, what do you mean by systems?
Here we go.
So we have a list. So on the list yesterday, there was Diet Coke. He drinks Diet Coke. So I bought some Diet Coke. So I brought it home from the grocery store. And there's an empty Diet Coke box sitting on the counter next to the refrigerator.
You cannot be serious.
He wrote it on the list, but left the empty container sitting on the counter.
I will look for you. I will find you.
and I will kill you.
He works at night, so I waited for the phone call.
Did he know something was wrong at that point?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Hey.
I said, I bought Diet Coke, but I noticed the empty container was sitting on the counter. Were you keeping it for something?
Hello? Hello? Don't hang up on me. I want to talk to you.
Do you ever catch yourself in the middle of these moments, these Sandberg moments, where you go, maybe Steve's right. Maybe I am nuts.
That's amazing. You're crazy.
Oh my God. That still is the funniest thing I've heard. Sandberg's here. This is Mary Sandberg. She's second in line for seniority in the Mary tree. So it's Mary Vandeveld and it's Sandberg on the show, for those of you who are new to the show. And her husband, Pat Boyle from Comcast Sportsnet, which makes her Mary Sandberg Boyle. No, Mary. Yeah, that's right. Mary Sandberg Boyle. And, I understand there's been another incident in your life that needs to be addressed.
There has.
All right, what happened?
So we have, in our bathroom, we each have a sink and we have our own set of drawers and things like that.
And you and Pat?
Pat and I, my husband. Uh-huh. And so I'm one of those people who doesn't like stuff out. So
what?
I know. Go figure.
What a mess.
Right?
Just like things, even stuff I use every single day.
Everything has a place, put it back.
Yes, the only thing that sits next to my sink is... A Dial foaming hand soap, and I only use foaming hand soap, and I only like the clear one. I don't like the green one. I don't like the peach colored one. So that's the only thing. And then these little,
you
like,
aren't telling your therapist all this. I know.
I want to ask, where did she put her toothbrush?
Well, see,
I don't want to.
That's a great point.
Interesting that you bring up the toothbrush.
Where is your toothbrush?
What the story is about. So I, in my drawer, I have these little like basket things, and my toothbrush goes in there.
Okay. In your drawer?
In the basket?
Yes, but your toothbrush is wet after you use it. It's a mesh basket thing. It's designed for this, people.
But you know, when you close the drawer, your wet toothbrush is growing mold on it, and then you're going to use it the
I
next
change
day.
My toothbrush. My system of toothbrush changing out is...
Every day?
And I use... No, not every day, but I also use the Oral-B. And I get the soft
head. Mary, I don't know. I don't like the sound of this.
So this
is a wet toothbrush in an enclosed situation.
That's not good. It needs to be standing upright. It needs air.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you could be a little dirty, Mary.
Oh, don't say that.
I am not dirty.
I
am not germy. I lay it. It lays on its back, the little toothbrush.
The worst possible development.
I hear mold actually grows up.
It does. It does, yes.
Stop it. So this actually has to do with a toothbrush. So Pat never has adopted the drawer system.
Oh, because he wants to be healthy.
Well, but I always do the drawer system, there's no container to put a toothbrush in or a razor or your toothpaste. So it just kind of sits around.
Sure, sure.
And so when we came back from Michigan yesterday after we were up there for a funeral, and he comes in the kitchen, he pulls out a one of our highball glasses, like a rocks glass, you know? And he said, hey.
By the way, he's not drinking highballs, just
no,
so we're clear.
No. And he's like, is it okay? I was thinking of using this for my toothbrush and my razor. And I'm like, now I know when I'm being asked that this is insane that he even has to run it past me. I mean, I know that this is because I'm...
Well, here's what's funny about that question. I know you well enough in a year. What have I known you? A year? Year and a half?
2 years, yeah.
I know you well enough in 2 years to know that's not going to pass. That's not going to get cleared by the tower. Secondarily, the idea that he did ask is amusing on a lot of levels.
I could hear the psycho theme in the back of my head like playing a little bit.
Wait. So would this be on the counter?
Yeah, he's going to put it on the counter. But it's – so I'm
– What about the feng shui?
Well, I know. And so, I mean, it's not feng shui because he's just laying it there on a towel anyway. But still, I'm more like, well, we've got 10 of those glasses and now there's only going to be 9 in the cabinet. And I'm going to look at that hole the whole time knowing that this glass is in the bathroom.
Hold on a second. So the problem wasn't – see, I'm totally wrong. I thought the problem you'd have with it is the appearance of a highball glass in your very carefully designed bathroom. But your concern is it messes up the order of things in your kitchen cupboard.
Yeah, so I responded.
Wow.
I would have thought the way you thought.
Yeah.
Me too.
I said, oh, well, why did you choose that glass? That was my response, as opposed to just saying something normal like, sure, no problem, because why would I care really, but I do care.
So you said sure.
Well, I said, oh, why'd you choose that glass? And he said, well, because the other one would be too tall for the razor. And I said...
Love that this was a discussion.
I know. And the look on his face is like he knows that this means a lot. Like, this is a problem for me. And
sure.
I was like, I had to really hold in all my what I really wanted to say. And I said, okay. And then I'm like, I'm going to get you actually something that's designed for a toothbrush and razor.
Wow.
Like a container. And so, but I've walked past the cabinet with the glasses since yesterday, a couple times yesterday looking, and I'm like, I pulled one of the glasses down so at least the bottom row is full now. But I know that there's this missing glass and it's in the bathroom and it really doesn't hold it well. It looks, it's
you
not
gotta
right.
You got to go. Listen, you've got to go. You got my clearance. You can leave right now and go to Bed Bath & Beyond. Wait for them to open.
Right. Yeah, I got the coupon right
and
here.
And get whatever. Yeah, take Mary's coupon and get whatever you need because this is going to make your head explode.
You know, as an investigative journalist, Mary, I'm dying for you to invite me over so I can take extended trips to the bathroom and other rooms just to check data out.
You know what'd be fun is to go into Mary and Pat's house when they're not there and just rearrange everything.
Oh my God.
And when we were and I know.
Right? Wow.
And I just told Pat on their way up to Michigan on Sunday, I said, hey, I need you to really support me on something. And he's like, what is it? And I said, we need to be harder on the kids and how they keep their sink in their bathroom when they're with us. And I'm like, I'm crazy. This is sounds like, because there was water all over. Is that really?
Water droplets, you mean?
Yeah, water. And like sometimes I don't rinse the toothpaste down. Mostly this is Patrick. I can't really say it's Catherine.
Who, by the way, is, for those who don't know the show, a little boy.
Right, a 10-year-old boy. Yeah, and so probably he's really knocking out of the park in 10-year-old boy world.
Can I just defend? I know the word's weird. Can I defend? No, here's why.
Okay, let me explain.
For 1 second.
Okay, but hold on. Let me explain. You're crazy. Here's Andrea's crazy version of this.
No, don't drag me into the crazy.
No, here's why.
I'm just going to defend
her. Here's why. Dave will back me up on this. Because nothing makes you more uncomfortable when you feel tension in the room.
No.
So you have to defer the tension
now.
Well,
I just understand now a little better. You don't want toothpaste or mouthwash or whatever it is in the sink, so I understand. So that's where it started with the kids, their sinks. You wanted them clean, and you want to set the good example.
Right.
And we recently did a story about toothbrushes and the matter, I'll put this as nicely as possible, the matter that could be floating around, like the dust particles and the other matter, we'll call it, that's floating around. It's more sanitary to have your toothbrush in a drawer as opposed to being upright. And
whoa.
You're talking about matter that starts with an F?
Okay, we don't need to go into it, but it is cleaner
to have it put away.
To have it put away. Yeah. So that's the only thing I'm going to say. And
Texter 630, Mary, the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem.
Sorry, Mary, I was trying.
I agree. Hey, thanks, Andrea. I felt the support.
847, the girl needs help. I believe they're talking about you. We have a dental hygienist that said never put a toothbrush in a drawer. They always should be standing straight up.
I got
But then we have this from the 708. Tell Mary I 100% agree with her on the glass thing. And then from the 815, Pat should run and not look back.
I got one from a friend of mine, though. She's making me look normal about house stuff.
There you go. See, I love that friend.
Mary, I just think you need your own bathroom. You need your own bathroom.
I know.
No. I'm going to be honest with you. You need your own house.
And I will say Pat is a really great husband. He's a great man. He's a neat freak, clean freak man. Mm-hmm. So I just happen to be so extreme that... Mm-hmm. It makes him look like he's got some flaws, but he doesn't really in the whole.
Do you guys have a prenup? You've been married like a year.
We don't.
Because your prenup should have just like all you need to fill in is the date.
No.
I knew there'd be one too many glasses moved. I can't take it anymore. Pat, just put the date in and sign. All right. Sandberg? Yeah.
I know, but this is a
Texter. Listen, some Texters are defending you.
My wife puts we have a toothbrush holder, right? With
that
both
would
our
be the solution.
Yes.
But when, like.
I actually pay a guy to stand in my bathroom and just hold my
during
toothbrush
the day,
until I need it again.
During the day, she puts that under on a shelf under the sink. So
see, she doesn't want to look
out
at
of
it
sight.
Right.
But then, obviously, when you need to brush your teeth, you leave it out.
But see, this is where the separation is for men and women, because it's like the decorative pillows on the bed.
Oh yeah.
And the bathroom sink has to look like just right. Who's coming into our bedroom? Who's in there? Who's judging us?
Well, you wanna,
nobody.
I am
nice
though.
For you.
I'm judging all the time, everywhere I go.
But I'm telling you, men don't think that way.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Kim Jong-un should take heed of the United Nations Security Council's unified voice. All members unanimously agreed on the threat North Korea poses.
His abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show
that he is begging for war.
And they remain unanimous in their commitment to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited.
We are not looking to the total annihilation of a country, namely North Korea. But as I said, we have many options to do so.
Secretary of Defense General Mattis and UN Secretary General Nikki Haley on the mess it is North Korea. Our friend Michael Osland joins us now. Michael, the author of The End of the Asian Century and the William Griffiths Fellow on Contemporary Asia for the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. At Michael Auslin, all over social media. Auslin is the last name. And Michael joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Steve.
Appreciate you coming on again.
Always.
Your holiday weekend, was it different than mine because of what you know about North Korea and what I don't?
No, I think the past 10 years have been different because everyone who's been looking at this for a decade has basically known we're going to get to this point. It's just the rest of the world now has sort of caught up with the danger of our failure in North Korea and our failure to, you know, to really take it seriously. We have no good options left, and so that's why you see all of the different types of messages coming out from the administration and around the world, and everyone from Vladimir Putin telling us that what we're doing isn't going to work to people calling for war right away. So this is what failure looks like, to be honest.
What does he want? What does Kim Jong-un want?
You know, if any of us knew that, first of all, you know, we'd have a much better chance of solving this, and also we'd get some sort of, you know, Nobel Prize. I mean, we haven't understood the North Koreans for a couple of generations, right? His father and his grandfather, who founded the country before him, we always thought that we could figure out a way to work with them. I think what he wants at one level is pretty simple. He wants to achieve the dream of his father and grandfather, which is a nuclear North Korea that is accepted as not a great power, but is accepted as a legitimate power in the world. I would say that that's certainly one thing, and that's why I don't think there's any way to bargain these weapons away from him. He's not going to give up what he is on the doorstep of achieving. I think second, what he wants, which is very, very rational, is the ability to say, if any of you, South Korea, Japan, United States, even China, think about invading my country, I now have a nuke that I can turn against your people. And are you really willing to risk one of your cities? So it's the ultimate insurance guarantee.
So if you had to put percentages on those, how much of that is the latter? Because I could see that he's worried that he doesn't want to be Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, for sure. Although I think that there is so little chance of that right now that it's more the externals. It's you know, keeping China and the United States and Japan and South Korea out, as opposed to, is there someone coming from that could actually come from within? The only ones potentially that could do that would be the military. And I think the truth is we just don't know enough about the relations between Kim and the military, other than assuming that he has absolute control, that it would even be viable that if, you know, we tried to invade or you know, even pressured him, that somehow there'd be an uprising to take him down. This is a country that has survived for over half a century when all of us have expected it to collapse the next week.
Michael, kind of a follow-up to Steve's question. If he were given a seat at the table with the grown-ups, or at least taken seriously on the surface, if he's seen kind of as a force, will that be enough? Would he back down? Do you see him doing that? Or do you see him being more like Caligula? Once he gets the seat at the table, all bets are off.
And if they use a Caligula analogy, a lot of people are naked.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's a lot of statues involved.
Yeah, no, we don't
yes,
want to see that.
Right.
You know, it's a great question, because we've actually never really tried that route. We've tried it in the sense of the narrower nuclear negotiations that we called the six-party talks, which brought them to the table. We negotiated over a period of years in the Bush administration, and then they wound up cheating on all of those agreements. We also did it in the Clinton administration, where we had the big 1994 agreed framework that immediately they began cheating on. And what they'll claim is that we didn't live up to our side of the negotiations. We didn't deliver certain things like the light water reactors, or we didn't get all of the aid to them that they promised. So we've never we've tried in a limited sense. We've never gone beyond the larger sense of saying, do we accept them as a regional actor? And if so, how would they respond? I mean, we're focusing on the nuclear and the missile capabilities that he's building. This is also a regime that is deeply involved in other illicit activities around the world, counterfeiting U.S. $100 bills, drug running, potentially human trafficking, all sorts of counterfeiting, all of this bringing money into the regime. So even saying that, you know what, we've come to an agreement on the nuclear and missile stuff, which I think is very unlikely, but even if we did that, this is a regime that's basically, it's a mafia regime. It is how it survived and made
right.
money.
We keep hearing how China needs to do more, needs to step up, and needs to control North Korea. Hasn't that ship sailed? Because this is a much... Look at it this way. You wake up this morning and Canada is suddenly shooting missiles over us, and suddenly Pierre Trudeau's attractive young son is nuke ready and wants to cause trouble. We're going to be awake. We're going to be very nervous about that. This is a much bigger problem in an immediate nature for China than it is for us from all aspects. So how much control does China really have?
Well, that's, in a way, Steve, that's the million-dollar question. We've always assumed it. I think that the reality is that China has certainly less political influence, no control, but less political influence than we've assumed. About 90% of North Korean trade goes through China. So they have a lot of potential economic influence, which they have not been willing to really bring to bear. And every time that they say they're going to do things like cut off coal or cut off oil, we find out later that there have always been workabouts that actually, in fact, the latest reports are that trade has increased between North Korea and China. Now, from Beijing's perspective, that might be because it wants to try to get more influence, but it certainly is not working. And as far as we can tell, and I think it's accurate, the Chinese, Xi Jinping, the current leader of China, is as frustrated and dislikes Kim Jong-un as much as we do. That doesn't mean, however, he doesn't like North Korea. He likes having North Korea there as a buffer between China and the U.S.-allied South Korea and Japan. He likes it as a problem for the United States, you know, doing all of this, focusing all of our attention on it. I don't think China wants a nuclear North Korea, but it has decided that, at least for now, it's willing to live with that to have the bigger geopolitical implication of a North Korea that's a problem for the West or for the liberal allies. But you're right, we're getting to a point where China really has to start making some decisions, because do you want a North Korea that feels completely independent of you? And are they willing, for example, to take real serious economic cuts from China? Because now they're so close to this nuclear program, as one commentator said the other day, they'd be willing, and I think it was actually commentator, I think it was Putin said it, they would be willing to eat grass as long as they can continue down this road. So we have not figured out the way to get China to recognize what's in the best interest regionally. China still is looking at its narrower interests.
Can we take some sort of solace or calm out of the fact that China's not panicked over this, or doesn't appear to be anyway?
Well, I think that I don't think we can take solace or calm from the idea that China isn't panicked, because I'm not sure that China honestly has any better ideas about North Korea than we do. I think the solace or the calm that we can take, and this is certainly a controversial perspective, is that if you think of North Korea honestly as a very dangerous yet rational actor, meaning what they want to do is survive, then they know that crossing the line, which would be a missile attack on a neighbor, certainly one that's allied with the United States, or the use of a nuclear weapon would almost certainly invite the destruction of the regime, then you start thinking about, okay, what does a nuclear peace look like in Northeast Asia? And I think that, you know, you played the clips of Mattis talking, Secretary of Defense Mattis, and I think that's where we're moving towards, to say we need a new deterrence and containment strategy, because we're going to live in a world with North Korean nuclear weapons. We're not going to attack them unless they do something stupid. The costs of war are too high. The problem, I think, Steve, is that we continue with this fantasy that somehow we're going to get denuclearization. Somehow we're going to get them to the table and come up with an idea, a bargain. It's not going to work. And they've told us it's not going to work, the North Koreans. What we need to do is drop that and instead say, all right, assuming we're not willing to go to war, which we're not going to do preventative war, we need to start thinking about containment and deterrence and living with North Korean nukes on the assumption, and it's risky, but on the assumption that they want to survive just as much as we do.
Okay, but Michael, speaking of living in a world like this, what would you say or what should be said to the people of Guam and South Korea who are basically now and have been for a long time looking over their shoulder constantly?
Yeah, South Korea for sure, Japan for sure. You've noticed, you know, that North Korea has been very hesitant to launch missiles over South Korean or even Japanese territory. When it did it last week, it was only the third time in 20 years, because they know that if one of these goes awry, right, if it lands on a city or whatever, you know, you could have a full-blown war. They have lived under this umbrella now, or this threat, right? It changes when it's a nuclear weapon because the potential of the destruction becomes so much more. But does the overall calculation change, that North Korea wants to intimidate its neighbors because it wants them to drop sanctions, it wants them to basically get out of its face? So it has all of these threats, but it obviously hasn't preemptively attacked its neighbors. You know, we lived through a nuclear world throughout the Cold War. We were willing to take risks during that because we saw it as an existential threat to us. We have to start thinking about North Korea in a related way. It's not a politically existential threat. This is not Moscow. It's not global communism. But it is a country where we have to start thinking, unless you want to go in and basically take it over to get rid of these weapons, which we're not going to do, how do you learn to live with it? And already its neighbors have started learning to live with it. We may have to get to that point where you mentioned earlier. Can we get them to the table and sit down with them, not because we're trying to denuclearize, but because we're in a new phase of saying, you know what, this is the reality, and we are simply going to go along with it, and you guys have to know that we are serious, that if you use these things or you make a mistake, it means the end of your regime. That's the deterrence side.
Yeah, and by the way, it doesn't mean he won. People that I hear all the time, there's a lot of tough talk that goes on here that has nothing to do with the White House and a lot of talking heads on cable. Well, let's just go get them. It doesn't work that way. Incinerating innocent people and causing the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of civilians in South Korea and thousands of American civilians and troops. This is why we take the higher ground. So let me leave you with this, Michael, and I'll give you a Thanksgiving analogy. Can't we give Kim Jong-un a tiny chair at the kids' table? I mean, it's not like we don't have relationships with dicey governments, specifically places like Pakistan, where we know that terrorists are being harbored every day.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's where we're moving towards. We have not wanted to do it until now, because he didn't have these capabilities. But you know what? He has the ICBMs that can hit us now, and if not today, it's going to be very soon. And he has the nukes, and even if they can't put them on the missiles today, they'll get there very soon. And so that does change the equation. You cannot pretend that this is 1994, 2005. It simply isn't. And so therefore, you do start talking about giving him a seat at the table in the sense, I would say, of acknowledging what his capabilities are and recognizing that you're going to have to live with them. And that means that you keep a line of communication open to him. That's fine. You don't promise anything, and you certainly don't pretend that you're going to denuclearize him. You simply have to recognize what we have to do, Steve. We have to accept our failure.
Right.
We have failed. And once you do that, you know, it's like the 12-step process. Once you do that, then I think you can start thinking more realistically about how you're going to live in this world. And by the way, I'll just leave you with the thought that really worries me. It's not war. It's accident. It's not that he's going to launch a war.
Exactly.
It's that, you know, you're going to have what we call a broken arrow incident. One of these missiles of his could launch off. One guy that he doesn't know that can't be trustworthy is going to light it off. Or one of these things is going to blow up and he's going to blame someone else because he can't take the blame. That, to me, is the real danger of living in a world with North Korean nukes. Not that he's going to launch a war. He knows that's the end of his regime. It's that this is a really, really difficult capability to keep safe. We've done it for 70 years, and we've had hundreds of accidents. Now we're going to live with North Korea and these things? That's what keeps me up.
Yeah, it's not a TV show, kids. This is real life. This is not Bugs Bunny and the Acme Company. This is a real problem, and there's literally thousands of people in the food chain. It's not Kim Jong-un and his bad haircut flipping a switch. So the accident thing is really desperately concerning. Michael Auslan, tremendous as always. The End of the Asian Century is the book, but start by following him on social media. It's Michael, Auslin. We always appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve.
It is 7:57. All these texters. What drives you nuts about your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend? Get to a few of these before the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:17, we'll get to traffic updates from Mary here in a second. And Mary, keep an eye on Good Morning America. They're announcing in their slow fashion, as only they can, the new cast for Dancing with the Stars. Woo-hoo. And since you're the official dancer on the program,
okay.
I expect you to be the correspondent for this very important story. Unless Dean has all the details right now. Dean, do you have the details?
I do have many of the names.
Oh, well, let's start criticizing.
We'll be participating. Frankie Muniz.
Frankie Muniz.
Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like him. He's okay.
Nick Lachey. Actor Nick Lachey was married to Simpson. What's her
Jessica.
Name?
Bart Simpson.
Jessica Simpson.
Wasn't he already in it? I was going to say, wasn't he on already?
Was he?
No.
No, there was Drew. There was Drew.
Yeah, and one of the others. One of the other boy band types.
Terrell Owens.
T.O. is in it.
Now, that's what I meant, T.O.
I got to tell you, he fumbled a lot. I would not want to be his partner. Mm-mm. Yeah. You're likely to get dropped.
How about Debbie Gibson? You Light Up My Life.
Only in Her Dreams.
Wasn't she in
Why
it?
Why did I think she was already
what
in
am
it,
I, I'm thinking of Debbie Boone. Sorry. Yeah, Only in My Dreams, Debbie Gibson.
Yeah.
Debbie Gibson. I'm with you, Mary. I thought Debbie Gibson was already in it.
80s pop star. That was Tiffany.
Tiffany was in it. I opened for Debbie Gibson. You know what that was like? Hey, joke boy, take your check and go home.
Did you really open for her?
Yeah, they paid me a bunch of money to open for. It's a good idea. that was when she was super hot, but there was nothing but 14-year-old girls screaming.
Oh, right.
Turns out it wasn't for me.
Nick Lachey's wife, Vanessa Lachey.
Oh, come on.
Is also going to be on. She's a host on Entertainment Tonight and Total Request Live.
So far, it's riveting. Who else you got?
B-team. She's going to be with Max, too. That bugs me.
Yes.
Nick Wolf Blitzer?
Vanessa Lachey will be with
Is
Max.
Is Wolf on this year?
Schmerkovsky.
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 I'd love to see Wolf on.
Oh, yeah.
I think they did offer him an opportunity to be on it. I don't know why he turned it down. Jordan Fisher? Stop me when you know any of these names. Yeah. Jordan Fisher.
She's Lindsay, a singer, but I have no idea what she sings.
Lindsay Sterling.
Oh, she's a violinist.
Okay.
Nikki Bella.
Wow, I don't know any of these people.
I don't know Nikki Bella either.
Victoria Bella. Arlen.
Nope.
We're doing well.
Oh, she's a former Paralympian swimmer.
Okay.
Victoria Arlen.
Good.
Nikki Bella is a WWE star. Investor Barbara Corcoran.
Oh, she's a shark.
Shark Tank investor.
Yeah.
Property Brothers realtor Drew Scott.
Okay, I don't watch that show, but the 10 seconds I've seen of it, he's a twin, right? Is that the show?
I don't think they're twins, but they look really alike.
I like that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they are twins.
One's the realtor, and one's the builder.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, they are twins.
But they should both be on. It should be the first Dancing with the Stars threesome.
Yeah, and then they dance with each other.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Remember, Dean, creepy's in the eye of the beholder.
Pretty Little Liars alum Sasha
Pieters.
Pieters.
Yeah, and she's with Gleb.
Wait, who?
Gleb the dancer.
Stop making
I
up
don't
silly.
Know. Pretty Little Liars.
Stop making up names.
My daughter loves that show. She would know who that is.
It'd be funny if they announced the entire cast and Tom, who's been hosting it for all these years, just goes, screw it, I'm out of here.
You know what's sad? There's not
We've run out of B
bad.
Celebrities.
There's not one name that Dean has said that, at least with like Mr. T or David Ross, you know, we knew some of these names. But Dean, I don't think you've said one name that where anyone can
isn't
go,
there
oh,
a
woo.
Isn't there a gymnast at all? No gymnast and no figure skater? Wow.
Nope. Jordan Fisher is a guy. This is a texter. 919, Lindsay Sterling's a violinist, as you said, Andrea, but she's built like a gymnast. Ah. It does some dance in her music video. She's my hands-down favorite. That's another texter.
Former NBA player and coach Derek Fisher.
Now, I think this is the first NBA player. I can't remember there being an NBA player. I mean, we had our first baseball player, you know, last year with David Ross.
Isn't there some scandal around Derek Fisher, Dave?
Scandal?
No?
What team was he on? Who?
Derek Fisher.
Well, he's been around.
Yeah,
he played Lakers and Houston and Utah.
Yeah.
Knicks.
Coached the Knicks.
His wife had an affair with a fellow player.
While he was coaching.
Let's bring her out. We've got her here today.
Maybe that'll be the worst year of his life segment. You know, they do the worst year of their life.
That's right. The texter, again, a helpful texter, says they should do a Dancing with the Stars with out-of-shape fat people. It'd be more entertaining.
Don't they usually have at least one or two out-of-shape fat people in?
Just older people. Do they have any older
They don't have any
people?
Seniors this year.
Yeah, they usually have a senior. Yeah.
Okay.
Unless that's Debbie Gibson.
I got to analyze this list.
Debbie Gibson.
It's making me very upset.
Yes, get back to us on that analysis, and we'll get back with more, including a bunch of superstars are signing up for the Harvey Telethon, which may have to be the Harvey and Irma Telethon by the time it hits next week. There's a new Saturday Night Live exhibit coming to Chicago. Bette Midler is leaving Hello, Dolly.
What?
And Dean has more from the Goldbergs. I just wish he'd plug it. What channel is the Goldbergs going to be on?
I'm not 100% sure. It might be WGN TV.
Yeah.
Weeknights at 10:30 p.m. and also 11. I'm not 100% sure on that.
I know the genius Paul Rennie that runs Channel 9 already appreciates you, Dean, because he's smart like that. But nobody plugs better than Dean.
That's right.
It's unbelievable.
True.
You don't last this long without knowing where your bread's buttered.
That's not your bread. It's 8:23. Mary's back with your travel trouble spots.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh.
All right, so, Dean, we figured out the Derek Fisher situation. Matt Barnes' ex-wife supposedly was having an affair with Derek Fisher. Even though she was the ex, they still called it an affair. And Matt Barnes drove to Derek Fisher and punched him in the face. Now, those two guys should be on.
Charming. Yeah, they should dance with the Fix-Up Brothers.
Each other.
Yeah, the Fix-Up Brothers dance together, and these two guys dance
together.
That's
what I'm talking about.
Far more interesting than the pair-ups that they already have set for this. That's why I only watch WGN TV.
Is that where the Goldbergs are going to be?
I think so. Yeah. Monday through Friday, starting this coming Monday, you mean?
I just wish you'd bring it up.
10:30 p.m. and then a second episode at 11 p.m. You know, Jeff Carlin's not the only Chicagoan on that show. I don't know if you know that.
Who else is on?
Lots of people behind the scenes are from Chicago. I met them the other day when I was on their lot. But also the actor who plays the youngest son on the show, he plays young Adam on the show.
Okay.
His real name is Sean Gimbroni.
Okay.
Grew up in Park Ridge and went to Maine South High School. He told me a little about that.
Yeah, just graduated this past May or whatever, and yeah, from Maine South. Yeah, they were wonderful. I've heard stories that not all schools are like that. They let me just jump back in, and then all my friends were there, and so I got to walk on stage with all my pals that I've known since kindergarten and stuff. Yeah. I think it's kind of bizarre for them because they have a memory of me when I was in their class, but then they also have a memory of me now when I'm like, if they see me on TV. So they welcome me, and it's like, with hugs and stuff.
Do your friends, you know, do they give you the business of Mr. Showbiz?
Oh, yeah, they absolutely. Yeah, they make sure, like, they tease me all the time about it. And
this is the nicest kid.
Not how old is that kid?
Such a nice kid. He just turned 18.
That kid's 18?
He's 18 years old.
What's with the voice?
That's how he sounds.
Wow.
What's his voice?
Well, I mean, I thought the voice was a bit when I'd see the show.
Well, I sort of did, too, until I met him. And that's just, he's just a nice, really, really, really very nice kid.
When are you going to tell the Jeff Garland story about his ridiculous notion that the censors are trying to keep him from showing off his junk?
That's going to be...
Is that tomorrow on the show?
Well, that's going to be Monday.
Monday.
We're saving the big story because, you know, that's when the show premieres. Monday, 10:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. Weeknights on WGN-TV.
So if you'd like to hear our friend Jeff Garland claim that the ABC censors are worried about him showing his junk, well, that's Monday on the show.
He explains the measures that they take to prevent of any showage.
Yeah, he's making it up. All right, so the Harvey telethon, that's a week from Friday?
It is, no, actually before that. I believe it's on the 12th, September 12th.
Okay, so it's midweek next week?
Yeah, it's, too bad they couldn't get any big names on this.
Who you got?
Beyonce.
Yep.
George Clooney.
Yep.
Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, oh, she'll show up for anything.
Oprah.
No, I'm not familiar with her.
Oprah. Had a popular talk show, I'm told.
Not ringing a bell.
Some native Texans, Jamie Foxx, uh-huh. Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory, Kelly Rowland, among the
Which one is the nerd, Jamie Foxx or Jim Parsons?
That would be
Bazinga. That's Jim Parsons?
Bazinga.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jim Parsons.
See, Jamie Foxx is out with Katie Holmes now.
They finally revealed their...
And Andrea thought it was disgusting because she thought Jamie Foxx was 75 and Katie Holmes was still 22.
I still picture her as Joey Potter from Dawson's Creek, but also because they were besties when she was married to Cruz.
Is that right?
That's a little creepy.
Thank you, Dean.
Okay, I don't know.
Jamie Foxx was besties with Tom Cruise.
Right, that's what makes it weird. It'd be like, you know.
And all the while.
There's a rule.
There's a going out with you.
I don't know what it's like with women, but there's a rule. With guys that you know, like if your best friend or a buddy was married to somebody or dated somebody for a period of time, that you don't go there.
I think women have that same rule.
They do?
At least I would.
I don't know. I don't come to your meetings.
I think they waited a pretty long time.
Like if you and I were divorced, I wouldn't go out with Dean.
Right.
You guys are so tight.
Right.
I don't think high school kids regard that. They don't care. You know what I mean?
They don't? They don't listen to that rule?
No, I don't think. In high school, don't you think?
I don't know.
Pass around boyfriends? I kind of do.
I don't know. What kind of high school are you promoting up there? Is that Hussey High?
No.
Mary Vandeveld for Hussey High.
Come on. Think about it. That's where all the drama happens.
Yeah, well, it happens mostly in the meetings that you guys are at. The Saturday Night Live exhibit, what is this?
This is going to be an exhibit that will be at the Museum of Broadcast Communication.
Okay.
It will be opening on October the 21st, and it's a 400 artifact exhibit of props and costumes and recreations of famous sets from the show's 40-year plus history. It's going to be at the Museum of Broadcast Communication, just right down the street. And it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. I've seen some video of they did this exhibit in New York for a year. It's going to be here for 14 months once it does open. It'll be $25 per ticket for adults to get in.
And can you sit in the sets and do the bit?
I'll bet that they have
some sort of interactive
things
thing.
Like that where you could probably, you know, this is probably going to be like a Weekend Update set or something where you can make a video or take a picture or something like that.
Bette Midler's leaving Hello Dolly. Was she to take a call? What's going on?
Well,
why is she leaving?
She's been on the show. She won a Tony Award already for the show. We knew she wasn't going to be there forever, but she's going to be leaving the show early January. And Bernadette Peters is going to be taking over
Miss Broadway, Bernadette Peters.
The lead role in that. So it's I think it'll still be pretty great. But if you've been wanting to see Bette Midler in it, and everyone that I haven't seen it, but anyone that I know that has seen it has raved about it. You have till it's like the first 2 weeks of January, and then that's going to be it.
Okay. Well, that's the list. You got anything else for me?
I have.
Should we go over the Dancing with the Stars cast again to see if that puts us to sleep completely?
Please. I did get a good nap during that. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga bought pizza for her fans. She got sick in Montreal. She performed in the rain the night before and then got sick. And had to cancel a concert in Montreal. So she apologized to her fans on the Twitter that all the kids are talking about. And then ordered pizza for all the fans that were waiting outside her hotel.
And, well, that's nice.
And she debuted her new boyfriend. She's got a new boyfriend.
What do you mean? He leaned out of the window?
Well, no. I mean, they were seen publicly for the first time. And they acknowledged that this talent agent by the name of Christian Carino is now the new BF.
You should never date your agent. That's why Steve Mandel and I broke up.
That's right.
You should write a book about that.
That's Dean. He's live at Channel 9 all morning. Keep watching him, won't you?
Thank you.
See you, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We've got a thing, but I suppose.
CL TV joins us in about 10 minutes at 9 o'clock. Our friend Scott Paddock, the boss at Chicagoland Speedway, joins us now. The big kahuna, the head cheese. What's your title, Scott?
President, but I like to go by head coach.
The head coach.
Because we do a lot of cheerleading.
At Chicagoland Speedway. Nice to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate that. The NASCAR Cup Series is coming. We're, what, 10 days away?
10 days out, yep. 10 days out. The heroes of the half shell, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, are back for an encore performance with the Tales of the Turtles 400 next Sunday on the 17th.
All right, so give us some of the stars in the sport that people are going to see next weekend.
Well, for the seventh consecutive year, Steve, we're kicking off the start of NASCAR's playoffs, and names like Kevin Harvick and Jimmy Johnson and Matt Kenseth and Kurt and Kyle Busch and others are going to be getting their championship hopes jump-started. The big news this year is it's the last time that we'll see Dale Earnhardt Jr., yep, one of the legends of the sport, compete, because he's going to retire from full-time racing at the end of the season. So we're going to honor and recognize Dale in an appropriate way with our fans. So looking forward to that.
Ticket information and what's available and what do you want fans to know?
Yeah, they can go on our website, chicagolandspeedway.com, and it's 4 days of racing action, the 14th through the 17th. And, you know, I always tell people this is more than just a race. Music's a big part of the event weekend, camping, tailgating. It's just a great way to escape the daily pressures of life and come out and create some great family and friend memories. And that's what we're all about.
The thing about going to a NASCAR race, you've never been, have you?
I never have.
You got
to love to.
It's
go.
Like people that have never seen hockey live.
Yeah, it's true.
You don't,
yeah,
understand hockey until you get to an NHL game. You don't really understand NASCAR until you're at an event. And people think, well, it's just cars going around in circles. No. Let me start with this. Best people watching are going to get just about anywhere. So if you like that, that's fun. You got great hospitality. And you've got these tremendous athletes who are going about, what, 220? Scott, is that about right? 215, 220?
You know, they'll be going about 195 in our place. But keep in mind, the temperatures in the race car will hit about 140 degrees. So yeah, imagine those conditions for 3 hours. So there's no doubt about it. These are athletes. Make no mistake.
Yeah, and they wear these you know, necessary safety suits, flame retardant and otherwise. And that's why most of the drivers that get in are actually Scott size, and they get out, and they're about 5'4". So
you're right.
Yeah, they shrink the size.
Race cars.
Dave said, Scott.
Hey, Scott, how many campers do you typically get for this weekend?
We'll have about 10,000 all in. Camping is a big part of the weekend, you know, and that's what they'll show up on Wednesday and they'll leave on Monday. So people come from all over the country for this event, and they plan vacations around it, and camping is a big part of that experience.
See, that's the way to do it, right? Get a luxury equipped RV and hang out, right? A lot of people do that, right?
They do. And, you know, when I describe this sport to a casual fan, there's two things I point to. One is this incredible sense of community. NASCAR is the quintessential American sport, bringing people from all walks of life together to just kind of celebrate in that 5-day kind of experience with camping. And then the access. We can get fans inside the ropes like no other sport, into victory lane, into the pit area, interacting with these drivers literally hours before the race begins. So I always say, imagine having a sideline pass to a Northwestern game or to Soldier Field and locker room access. It just doesn't happen for many, but
it's true.
Part of the fabric, yeah, of this sport.
It's very true. Scott, you know, you're a great cheerleader for the sport, and you get everybody pumped up for it. So why don't we give away one of the driver's cars? Let's just give it away to the seventh caller right now, Scott. What do you say?
You know what? How about this? We have various driving schools coming out to our place. It's one of those bucket list kind of experiences. You can drive a stock car yourself. And how about if we give away a Richard Petty driving experience for one of the upcoming dates? We'll give that to you guys, and you guys give it to a lucky listener.
That's fantastic. That's tremendous. Let's go seventh caller. Seventh caller, 312-981-7200. All right, one more time on ticket information, Scott.
Sure. It's chicagolandspeedway.com or call 888-629-RACE. Parking is free. You can bring your coolers into the grandstands. It's just a great affordable value proposition and a great way to create wonderful family memories.
Hey, Scott, can anybody buy the Fan Zone Pit Pass if you want to get down there and meet some of the drivers?
You sure can. That's okay. A modest upgrade, and that gives you access to driver introductions. We got a pre-race concert with Josh Turner. He hit number one with Hometown Girl about a month ago. He's going to be doing a pre-race set, get you into Victory Lane to get a picture with the Monster Energy Cup Championship trophy. You can view tech inspection going on in the garage. That's kind of the access I was talking about, really unique aspect of the sport.
Of course, Andre, you could cash in your celebrity chips and get down there.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm still there.
Yeah. We all have celebrity coupons. Did you know that, Dave? Did you get your celebrity coupon book?
Mine must have gotten lost.
No, it's not for NASCAR. It's for anything. It's for a good table at a restaurant. It's for, you know, it's the reason you got into show business.
I didn't get mine.
Okay.
And if I say I know Steve Cochran, that will get me.
You'll be able to get anything you want in this town at the regular price. So drop that soon. Scott, thank you. You know what a fan I am, and I always appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate the support. Have a great day, guys.
See you later.
Thank you.
Scott Paddock. How tall is Scott? 6'8", 6'9"?
Yeah, he's a basketball player.
Yeah. One of the great things is when the drivers make him get in the car, and then they have to use the jaws of life to pull him out, and there's been no crash. The big boy. It's traffic time, and Mary's back with an update, and then we'll check in with Tex again before 10. The text question of the day is, what does he or she do in your life? Husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, that drives you nuts. We've gotten some great texts this morning. All comes off a conversation with Sandberg, who, in case you missed it, is a little crazy earlier in the program. Okay? So, 312-981-7200, that's the text line.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bing, bing. I love it. I love it. I'm sitting there tweeting. Bing, bing, bing. You press a button. Bing, bing. They all hand you checks. Bing, 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 bing. We had our beautiful Marine standing there. Bing, 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 bing. You know, in the old days, bing, bong. You know, with a map. Bing, bing, bing. Little mouth on him. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, bing, bing. They're cleaning up. Fix it up. Bing, bing, bing. A 14-point plan. Bing, bing, bing. Anthony Weiner. You know, the little bing, bing, bing. Everyone's attacked me. Has gone. Bing. Everyone else. Bing. Where have they gone? Bing. Wow. What a tackle. Bing, like a rocket ship, except in the wrong direction.
You ever wonder if you cut them open, what you'd find? Probably mostly Taco Bell. The President of the United States is allegedly going to be calling us any second now.
Oh, again?
Yeah.
This is great.
He's a big fan of the show, as you know. But we have breaking radio news from New York City. For those of you who travel or who listen to sports radio on a national basis, there's a show in New York called the Boomer and Carton Show. And Boomer is Boomer Esiason, the former Bengals and Jets quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Carton is a local New York sports talk guy named?
Craig Carton.
Craig Carton is about to go to jail?
Well, I think that's...
Well, let's
get
to that assumption.
A little bit ahead of the story. The story is that... Craig Carton, who hosts the Boomer and Carton show, faces fraud charges for engaging in a ticket-selling scam after accumulating gambling debts. He is facing conspiracy and securities fraud charges, which were unsealed in Manhattan federal court this morning.
So, like, he would get tickets from the station and then scalp them?
I'm still seeing this for the first time. The SEC says... that in the middle of last year, he solicited investments in ticket reselling enterprises after he accrued millions of dollars worth of gambling-related debts.
Mm.
That's a problem.
He was not on the air this morning, Steve.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, he probably had some comp time he was burning off.
A $5 million gambling debt. I mean, that's a lot of slots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sports gambling.
Mm-hmm. Sports the books, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know him. Do you know Carton?
I do not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Boomer Esiason, I think, is a terrific broadcaster and good guy. Just because he's
limited experience with him, but he's always a good guy.
Yeah. Just because he's on the air with this guy doesn't mean.
I think Boomer's involved. I think Boomer's involved.
So anyone on a morning radio show, if one person's in trouble, everybody's in trouble.
Steve Harvey's involved with this.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Steve Harvey was laundering money for Craig Carton. That's the story I'm floating this morning.
Okay.
So you're saying that he should distance himself from his co-host?
No, Dave's saying he should distance himself from me.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I'm just.
I see his analogy. I see his mind work.
You see where I was going with this?
Oh, yeah. The president's ready. Oh. The president's on the phone.
Oh,
right
thank
now.
God.
Let's go to the phone right now. President Donald Trump. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Cochran. You know, I'm short on time. I'm about to go to the Situation Room to discuss the fact that pumpkin spice is taking over the country. Got to hear what our options are.
Yes.
To make this quick.
Yeah, well, it is that time of year. Now, you've announced you're entering DACA. This is the program for undocumented immigrants. These are kids, children who had no part in the decision to be here. Any regrets on the decision or thoughts in general about it?
Look, I'm not going to lie, Steve. That's for when I tweet and speak on national TV.
Right.
Ending DACA was a tough one. It was really tough. Did you hear I actually rescinded it? Whatever the hell that means. I remember seeing the same reaction from people when I left Celebrity Apprentice. It was very sad.
Mm-hmm.
This DACA thing's all about young illegals who are dreamers. They're dreamers. And I'm happy to announce that although they'll be shipped to Tijuana, they'll be encouraged to dream that they're still living in Southern California.
All right, so you can encourage them to dream. You're just not going to allow them to live their dream.
I have a big heart for them.
Look, this is a tough end. This is the only life these people have known so far.
Look, we're a nation of laws, Steve, and rules are rules. Let's be honest. They're not rich and white, so they got to go. They got to go. Hey, it's not like I don't see the bad side of this either. You know, as a successful businessman who's made lots of money, I could tell you the pinata industry is going to take a huge hit. Believe me.
Well, keep an eye on it for me. Meanwhile, I've got to say, and you know me, I don't mean to be judgmental. You know what a big fan I am of yours, but you claimed you had a heart for these people. How am I supposed to believe that?
I do have a heart, Steve. Bigly. In fact, I actually know of some DACAs. You know, one of my business attorney's brother's best friend's younger sister's cousin's father-in-law's ex-wife's friend she met at Pilates is a DACA dreamer.
No idea.
Tell me I don't feel this on a personal level.
Yeah, no, you do sound close. You sound very, very close. Listen, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since hurricane season started. We're watching Irma. The Texas flooding's an enormous catastrophe. And we saw you in Texas as some of the victims.
Yes, I had an important meeting with my entire staff before I left for Texas, and they informed me that I felt very, very heartbroken over what happened to these people. You know, frankly, the most disturbing thing about the flood zone was that everyone lost power, their cell phone batteries drained, they couldn't read my tweets. I really felt bad for them. You know, I felt bad. And did you see Melania right there by my side handing out food rations?
Sure.
At first, I didn't even recognize her without the makeup and a baseball cap and sneakers. I mean, she looked like a six at best. I almost called INS on her. But seriously, I talked to people there who saw the hurricane with their own eyes, and there was wind on many sides. Many sides.
Well, I think that's probably fair. Listen, the white number 45 USA ball cap in Texas you had on your head. You remember that hat?
Right. It's a great cap.
Sells for $40 online, and it benefits your campaign. It's sort of product placement. Isn't that an ethics violation? I mean, what do you say about that?
It's a collector's item. Look, I wasn't going to wear a Make America Great Again hat because now that I'm the best president of all time, check the polls, nearly 8 months on the job, we're already great again. So frankly, if we're being honest, I need a new hat that says, already made America great, let's golf. Booyah. But that's too much to put on a hat. We all know that. So I wear number 45 to represent the difference in age between me and Melania. So now, when you order one white USA Trump 45 ball cap at a regular price, Steve, listen, you'll get the next three half off with the purchase of a shirt, regular T-shirt, and a golf shirt. It's a win-win. You like golf shirts, don't you, Kevin?
Yeah, no, I do. And I almost stayed awake during that entire explanation. Now, listen, the North Korea thing, before we run out of time, they've tested a hydrogen bomb. They say they can put this thing on a missile. They threatened to blow up the U.S. mainland. You're the president. What's the plan?
Yes, I do. Everyone needs to relax. Look, the whole hydrogen bomb test was just a grand finale at the Labor Day weekend fireworks show at Kim Jong-un's house. He does it every year. Spectacular. Seriously, I do have a plan. I was meeting with General Kelly, General Mattis, and General Mills to discuss what kind of cereal should be the official cereal we don't let North Korea have anymore. With the exception of Rice Chex. Well, you know what? Look, I have absolutely nothing to worry about, okay? We've already dispatched my ambassadors, Dennis Rodman and Gary Busey, to talk to Little Kim. Every Everybody just needs to calm the hell down. Kim Jong-un is just a sad little fat kid with duck sauce on his chins having a temper tantrum. He's Chris Christie from Koreatown, completely harmless.
All right, well, I suppose that could make some people feel better. All right, look, we're going to run out of time here, but the Russia probe is getting more and more intense, and I think closer
fake
to
news.
You. Yeah.
Fake news.
Three congressional committees pursuing investigations. Paul Manafort, your son Don Jr., they've got to testify again. Aren't you concerned?
There's nothing there. Not at all. Look, I want to tell you something, Steve. Paul Manafort wasn't fired for the Russia nonsense. He was fired for not admitting he was a platinum member in the Hair Club for Men, and he had a huge crush on Ivanka. She's daddy's hot little girl, Paul. You can never have her. And secondly, Don Jr. is the most loyal special boy there is. He'll do just fine when he testifies. He was dropped on his head by our Guatemalan nannies many, many times. I doubt he'll remember anything incriminating he can tell Congress.
All right, we're out of time, which is good because I was hoping we'd get through without another creepy daughter reference, but not so much. But, Mr. President, I know you're busy. I appreciate your time, and thanks for giving us time today.
You know what I have in common with meteorologist Tom Skilling tracking a hurricane?
I do.
We both rely heavily on many international models.
That's absolutely true. Well
Think
said.
About that.
Yes, no, I will. I'll get back to you. That's the president. That's POTUS right there, Donald Trump.
Give you a lot of time today to talk about a lot of different issues.
Don't you think that he and I are getting along really well now?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, a lot of people thought I wasn't giving him a fair chance. I think he had a lot of a fair chance there.
Any reference Skilling? I mean,
yeah, sure, of course. Well, everybody knows Skilling, right?
Right.
He wishes he was Skilling. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll check those texts again. Things that are driving you nuts about your own personal Melania or your own personal Don. Number to text is 312-981-7200. We're live on CLTV and on 720 WGN. There's a guy coming up who is doing something pretty cool. He's a cardiac surgeon. Somebody else I think you should know. So we'll get to that. Sandberg earlier this morning told us a story of, her continued lunacy. And we've been taking texts for a couple of hours on it. You still have a few minutes left to text in what drives you nuts about your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, or your girlfriend. Have you learned anything from this?
I have. I've learned that there's a lot of support for me out there.
There is some of that.
There is some support for you.
There
out
is some
there.
Support. There's also some people that think that I won't be married much longer.
Right. Right.
There's also some people that also have some egregious things going on in their homes. The one in particular, I think, is the lady who said her husband's armpit hair is stuck to the deodorant.
I don't understand it.
That's gross. They must use the same deodorant. Well, what other?
Or he doesn't put the cap on, and so she has to.
I don't understand that.
That is so gross.
It was very gross.
I mean, you put the cap on,
right.
But I also don't understand why you would use your the same. Yeah, you sweat differently. Why would you use the same deodorant?
Well, you're clean when you put deodorant on, though, aren't you? Like you do it after the shower.
Well, it depends. Don't you use it in the morning? Like you know.
Sometimes you need to reapply.
Yeah.
I still would want my own. You know, don't anybody use my
deodorant. Yeah, deodorant shouldn't be shared.
It's a personal thing.
Yeah, I agree. So.
We had a guy work here who didn't use deodorant. You guys remember that?
Who was it?
I'll tell you off there.
Okay.
But someone who didn't use deodorant was more of a naturalist.
Oh, right.
Also, somebody's...
And I had to take that person aside and go, you smell like a forest and not the good end.
Right. Eau du naturel.
Naturalize somewhere else.
Yeah, somebody said their wife hangs stuff on the doorknobs. That would drive me nuts. Purses, jackets, and things like that. Put it in the closet or whatever. You don't hang stuff on the outside.
Do you have a curator for your museum?
I do.
Is it you?
I am. But I will say, when Pat brings home the dry cleaning, he will hang my dry cleaning outside the closet just so I know it came back so I can file it away because I like to organize things by color and such, and so I don't expect him to.
See, I go two ways on that. Like, I won't hang Maureen's clothes because I don't want to, and also because and also because I think I'll screw it up.
Yeah, you won't, you don't know where
it's,
it goes.
It's a safe bet.
See, that's I'm about to lose all favors now from Sandberg. I hang stuff on the closet door.
Oh,
especially what I'm going to wear if I know what I'm going to wear the next day.
Oh.
Well, it's all procrastination.
But I'm not. But I'm going to stop.
There you go.
I'm stopping it right
You'll
now.
Feel better. I don't know how anyone can sleep in their bedroom with a closet door open or things out of closets or drawers.
What?
Same here. Yeah. Same here. I'm the same way.
I swear I'm going to break into both of your homes
with
a team of people just to mess stuff up. And then part of your therapy is just going to be to just stay in bed. And just, Dave, sleep through it.
It's just about
having things in order.
What do you do?
That's
with,
all.
What do you do with the clothes once you fold them?
They put in a drawer.
Put them away.
Oh, or you don't let them sit on the dresser for a couple hours while you multitask. No.
If you fold them, you put a really good fold in it. Don't you want to leave them out to look at them for a while?
That's what I'm saying.
I think it helps create a calm, tidy, very clean, buttoned-up space for me to relax in. Maybe.
Imagine if you had married Sandberg.
Oh, my God.
You had velvet ropes outside the house. You'd be charging admission.
They'd wear, like, oven mitts to touch each other.
I'm not like everything has to be to a T perfect.
If I talk to Karen,
yes,
if I talk to Karen,
yes. Yeah.
Who I like better than you, as you know.
I don't blame you. I do, too.
What would she say is the one thing you do that drives her nuts?
One thing?
I will...
Well, let's go with the top five.
Yeah, when you're married 32 years, there's quite a few things.
Okay, I'd say there's two things. I will put stuff on the banister, like my hat or my jacket, instead of putting it in the closet, which is about three feet away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just because I've just gotten home.
Sandberg just stiffened
up
and moved about 6 inches away from
you. And the other thing is, once in a great while,
yes,
I will take the last Triscuit in a box. Not realizing the box is empty and put the box back in the pantry.
There's not a chance Sandberg will marry you now.
No,
I wasn't really lobbying.
I believe when that Diet Coke story came up a year and a half ago, Dave did say he's been accused of leaving empty boxes around.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just throw the box away?
But that's,
he claims
I'm not
to
paying
not know.
I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
Oh, so when your hand reaches the one Triscuit in the box?
But that would be a Dave. Dave barely eats, so he would just pull out a Triscuit. You know, I'm just going to indulge here with my one Triscuit and not notice that there's other Triscuits.
That really surprises me about Dave.
That's funny.
I thought he was going to say that he falls asleep on the couch but pretends not to.
I do that, too.
Because I know that's also something. I think that might just be men do that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I forgot the third thing.
If I was Karen, that would be
like I like how Sandberg's reminding you of things you do that annoy Karen.
I just remember that one.
Well, are you not supposed to sleep on the couch?
No.
They doze off, and then you say, we should go upstairs and let's turn off the TV. But I'm not sleeping. I'm like, I'm watching your eyelids. They're closed.
I'm
resting
my
eyes. I'm the police on the couch about that.
You do that, don't you, Steve?
It drives me. And listen, we'd have to do a week's worth of special shows. But I fall asleep on a chair, like a recliner. And on Friday and Saturday night, these are the only two nights a week. For you watching NCL TV, this doesn't just happen. Yeah. This takes years of abuse. And Friday and Saturday nights, I will stay up late because, you know, I was always a late night guy.
Because you can.
And those are the two nights I can't. And invariably, I'll fall asleep and I'll wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning in the chair.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. If I wake up and Pat's not in the bed and I go out there and he's had fallen asleep on the couch.
Oh, there's Pat on the couch.
You better watch out.
There's Dave on the couch. They're all sleeping.
I turn off that TV and I'm like stomping around in my pajamas.
He'll be sleeping on that couch permanently.
What drives you nuts about him or her? 312-981-7200. Big story next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Well, a special afternoon at Wrigley. Is it afternoon or tonight that they're playing? Your Cubs.
The Cubs actually are not playing at home. They're in Pittsburgh.
Well, we need to have them to swing by because we're doing a special thing today.
Okay, we'll see if we can work that out.
Today, more than 2 dozen heart transplant patients and their families, plus dozens more who've gotten a life-saving ventricular assist device, are going to gather at Wrigley to celebrate their second chance at life. And joining us in studio to talk about it is Dr. Tony Tatulis. Doc, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
This must be a fun event.
This is an amazing event.
How many people total? Because you got family members coming as well. So a couple hundred people are going to show up for this?
Yeah, we'll have probably close to 300 people.
Yeah. All of them happy to be alive because, as you men were talking off the air, you're kind of the last stop on the train, right? You're the guy I don't want to meet.
No, you don't want to meet me. These patients have had heart failure. They've failed medical therapy, and they have ultimately required transplantation. Also, many of them can't wait for a transplant. And if you can't wait for a transplant, We have ways to support people, and one of those ways is what's called a ventricular assist device. And these are heart pumps that we surgically implant into the patient, and it gives them the opportunity to be independent and to be patient and to wait for the right heart and give them a great outcome.
So you don't, obviously you don't know when a heart's going to become available, so you have to do this to keep these folks alive until their number comes up.
Exactly right. Years ago, people would wait in the hospital with IVs and tubes, and now people can go home. And they can be independent and have a life as they wait for. It's the technology has really exponentially improved.
We should explain that you, sir, surgical director of the mechanical heart program at Advocate Heart Institute at Christ Medical Center. It's advocatehealth.com/heart institute. What do we know now about transplants that we didn't know 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Is it technology that's changing and science that's changing, or is it safe, fairly stable?
I think that we know a lot, and because we are getting smarter, our results of transplantation continue to get better. You know, years ago, in the early days of transplantation, people would get a transplant, it would work for a short time, and the organ would fail. But with improvements in immunosuppression, we're able to better care for the patients long term.
See, it's interesting to me because I had an uncle, my favorite uncle, who passed about a year and a half ago, and he had had a heart transplant in his late 50s. He lived for 20 years. Is that a long time to live with a transplanted heart?
Yes, that's longer than average.
Okay.
So, you know, we continue to get better. Many patients in the early days of transplant wouldn't survive well just because of the operation, or they were poor choices to get a transplant because they were so sick at the time of surgery. And today, with these ventricular assist devices, we can improve the condition of the patient so that by the time a transplant is readily available for them, they're in good shape and we can perform a safe operation.
You and Dr. Pappas, two of the premier heart surgeons in the area, of course.
I'm not just saying that because they're
Greek, Steve, but I know many people. My uncle
doesn't hurt that they're Greek. That was interesting.
My uncle had a surgery with Dr. Pappas. We were talking about some of the common people that you've performed surgeries on as well. But are people living more heart healthy nowadays because of what we know?
Some people aren't.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people who get into trouble with heart disease is their own fault. And certainly smoking would be the first easy thing to quit doing. Our lifestyle is important. Processed sugar, you know, obesity certainly contributes to it. High blood pressure. So there's simple things that we can do to try and change the natural history of heart disease.
If you said, I got one thing I'm going to tell you, go do it today and you're going to be more heart healthy. What is it?
Do things in moderation. There's not one thing.
Okay.
I think people are looking for more, like move more too.
Well, I think people are looking for that one magic bullet, that one thing to make them live longer. I don't know that we have that one magic pill, that one magic medicine. I think we just need to be prudent in terms of our lifestyle and in our medication. And
eat less, eat better, move more.
Yes.
Yeah. So the things we used to call common sense.
It works well.
Yeah. Tends to. Here's a question that I've never asked anybody. What's it like to have a heart in your hands and put it in someone else's body?
It's one of the coolest things you could ever possibly imagine. Not only to be able to hold someone's heart, but when you have someone so sick and you see this ginormous heart that's not functioning well, and you take it out, and then you look inside their chest and there's nothing there. There's no heart there. There's nothing. And then you're waiting for the heart to come in because it's being flown in from somewhere. And you look inside, and they're being supported by the heart-lung machine. And then you get the new organ is brought, and you implant it. And then it just kind of lays there for a second. And then all of a sudden, it starts working just by...
So you literally see it catching up to the body's circuitry and start to beat.
It's incredible. It's so, so amazing.
It's goosebumps, man.
So not only you get to do that, but then, at least as a surgeon... you get to see the family thereafter and the patient.
I was going to say, do you actually get to go out? Obviously, you can do whatever you want, but are you the guy that goes out first and say, hey, we got a successful outcome here?
It depends on the patient, but oftentimes myself or Dr. Pappas or one of our colleagues, you know, we speak with our families and we give them an update, or our nurses go and give them an update of what's going on.
I'd be the first one out there.
Okay.
Hey, what do you see what I just did?
Right. Right? No kidding.
It's a whole team, though. It's not just I. It's a team of us. And, you know, fortunately, at the Advocate Heart Institute, we have an amazing team of physicians, cardiologists, nurses.
Well, you have to. This is a big, big, big deal.
It's a big deal.
How many transplants have you done? Any idea?
Well, we did 5 this month. We did a couple over the weekend.
Yeah, me too. 5 this month?
Yeah, it, our, you know, we're a new transplant center. So the Advocate Heart Institute at Christ Hospital is a relatively new transplant center in the Chicagoland area. We're slowly growing. We've done close to 20 this year so far. But we've got
constantly on call then? Because I would think...
Well, not myself. Not only my... I mean, I work with some amazing surgeons, and our cardiology, our heart failure specialists are all amazing. We're all
But I'm
just
trying to think of how would you have a schedule because you don't know when the heart's going to become available?
We just... If we're in town, we're ready.
Okay. It's an amazing thing.
How fast do you have to make the heart transplant as far as, so when someone passes away and they decided, okay, we're going to donate the organs, you have to harvest the organs, what is the window that you have to remove the organ and then transplant it?
Yeah, the heart is, you know, there are new systems that are being evaluated to try and preserve the heart for a longer period of time, but for the most part, from the time that we have accepted the heart and the heart is taken from the donor, ideally we want to be implanting it within 4 hours. And that's why there's geographical restraints on the allocation of hearts for patients throughout the United States. So we receive hearts from our region primarily because of the geographic location and the time of transportation to get them back to our own institution.
Among your many success stories are Gwendolyn Westland. She was 34 years old and a cancer patient when she got her heart. That's got to be unbelievably gratifying to be able to give someone who's barely into their 30s a chance at the other two-thirds of their life.
Yeah, many patients are young, and you know, and in terms of having some form of malignancy beforehand, we have to treat that so that we can allow them to tolerate the immunosuppression
sure.
to try and prevent that from recurring.
I salute the work you do. You are a walking, talking hero, my friend. I'm guessing you don't spend all day thinking that way because that would affect your job. But I hope you pat yourself on the back occasionally because I can't think of more important work. God bless you.
We never like to get too full of ourselves.
That's a good thing.
We always can be better.
What's the one thing you could do better at work?
Well, I think there's a lot of things I can do better at work.
I was trying to set you up for the same answer you had before. There's not just one thing.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of things. Tony, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to everybody at Advocate, advocatehealth.com/Heart Institute. I hope you have a great day at Wrigley.
We're looking forward to it, and it's an amazing event with our patients, and thank you for having me on your show.
Give them all hugs from us.
Thank you very much.
Bill and Wendy coming up, 720 WGN.